Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. The election season is upon us again, and those who are non-political couldn't care less about the circus that will be paraded before us over the next year. And I can appreciate some of that disdain because the whole thing is quite worldly. As the early church father Tertullian said, nothing is more alien to Christians than to politics. But let's not write off politics altogether, because of 1 Timothy chapter 2, we're to pray for kings and all who are in authority. God's institution, the church, is to be the conscience of the state. We are to be the teachers of the state. And there are all sorts of spiritual lessons that can be gleaned through politics and this political season. We see all of the double standards. We see the hypocrisy. We hear all the lies of the politicians. And we see how people can lie even when they don't realize they're lying because they're deceived by their erroneous worldview. And in this political season, we see how much of the public is looking to the government to be their savior. They're expecting the government to take care of them in only ways that God can. In a secular atheistic mindset, the government becomes God. Psalm 146:3, do not trust in princes, in mortal man, in whom there is no salvation. So there are all sorts of spiritual lessons to be seen during this political season. God is putting all this before us. History is his story. So between now and the elections, my focus in this program is going to be on all the lessons that we should be seeing and learning. Most Christians already see many of these lessons, but it's good to have it reinforced. Let me make a recommendation here. If you're in church and a brother in Christ wants to talk about some crazy thing that happened in politics that week, rather than just ripping into the candidates and the policies, ask your brother in Christ, what is the spiritual lesson God is trying to teach us? That puts the political conversation on a whole spiritual plane. Our conversations then become edifying. Rather than just arguments or just trying to show how annoyed we are over the political process, we're edifying others. So when I hear political conversation between Christians starting to deteriorate, I always ask that question to get the conversation back to God. What are the spiritual lessons God is trying to teach us in all this? Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. We should be dispensers of edification and grace. So the topic for today's program is entitled The Trump Roadblock. That Donald Trump, for all of his personal flaws, is a roadblock, maybe even just a temporary roadblock, holding back the full onslaught of the ungodly leftist agenda, globalism, communism, transgenderism, the persecution of religious morality, the curtailing of free speech, the full government funding and support of abortion and LGBT initiatives. And if you've been following the candidates on the left, that is their radical agenda that will fundamentally remake America. If you need to know how bad the current situation is in America, where we're going, just watch the Super Bowl halftime show. Enough said. Well, in the providence of God, Donald Trump gets elected, someone who is a thorn in the side of the media and the leftist politicians. Like a lot of other evangelicals, I was hoping to get into office a Christian statesman. Someone like Ted Cruz or Ben Carson. And I was disappointed that Trump won the Republican nomination back in 2016. His track record looked like that he was a liberal running under the Republican title. Who would have thought that he would have surrounded himself with all of these Christian leaders and advisors? Now, at that time, a few of my friends were saying only Trump could take on the Washington swamp. And I thought that was ridiculous because someone like Ted Cruz was a solid conservative. He was a fighter. He surely would have been a principled man to clean up Washington. But I have to admit, those early Trump supporters were right, or at least they made a lucky guess. Ted Cruz would not have mocked the media like Donald Trump. President Trump brought about a whole new attitude toward the media. The media is not to be feared or kowtowed to. We now know that the media does not have the power that it claims to have. Every politician used to fear and capitulate to the press, but Donald Trump has broken the grip. God had Donald Trump do the dirty work of insulting and mocking these hypocritical leftist propagandists. And Ted Cruz probably would not have beaten Hillary Clinton. The election was too close. The Republicans needed those blue dog Democrat voters that Trump brought in. Christian value voters like us. We love those Christian candidates, but there is a whole swath of patriotic cussing, tobacco chewing, flag waving Americans who are put off by what they call moralists. As one editorialist in the New York Post I read back in 2016 wrote, "I'm not interested in a holy roller in the White House." So, by the providence of God, Donald Trump is in the White House, and we need to appreciate that he is there to do some of this necessary dirty work that God doesn't want his people engaged in, even though God has surrounded Trump with some Christians and some solid conservatives to be his advisors. Trump has hindered the full-on transgender agenda in public schools. He has stopped the gay rights agenda and the globalist agenda in the State Department. He supported Israel. He supported and mandated free speech in public universities. He's cut off funding to Planned Parenthood. And it's not only just the reversal of some of the previous administration's leftist agenda. The Trump administration, by being there, has prevented all sorts of radical legislation that would have taken place if the left had won. We have no idea what we've been saved from. So a reasonable and a biblical assessment of the Trump situation is that he is a roadblock against leftism. He is a God-sent roadblock. Daniel chapter 2, verse 21. It is God who changes times and epochs. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. And this is said about the braggy king of Babylon, who was God's man for the season to judge the ungodly Jews and at the same time to save a remnant of godly Jews. Or Isaiah 44:28, it is I who say of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, he will perform all of my desires. And Romans 13:1, every person is to be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. We need a biblical view of the presidency because we're still reading articles from Christian sources that fail to give a proper biblical perspective. Either they overemphasize Trump's greatness and goodness to the point of sycophant veneration, or the other extreme, that Trump is a deceiver, that he's leading evangelicals down the wrong path, that he's a wolf in sheep's clothing. I just read an article put out by the Christian political commentator Eric Erickson and his website, The Resurgence. The article was entitled, "Welcome to the Imperial Presidency." And the article went on to condemn the president as a man who, quote, cannot be trusted with power. What's with that? I mean, God put him in power. He's not violating the Constitution. It seems to me that complaints as these fail to see the bigger story in the Trump presidency. The purpose and the providence of God in putting Donald Trump into office. So currently it looks as if Trump is winning. If things stay the same between now and November, Trump is going to get 4 more years. I have a much better understanding of why Trump will win after attending the Trump rally in Wildwood, New Jersey. Of course, I didn't get in. 175,000 people signed up for tickets for a venue that only held 7,000. Even with tickets, it was still first come, first serve. And there were at least 1,000 people who showed up the night before and slept throughout the night in freezing cold weather. The lines wrapped around the blocks in Wildwood. There's just this enthusiasm for Donald Trump that hasn't been seen in politics for decades. I did some interviews. I listened to a lot of conversation. And my takeaway is this. Trump supporters are not all Christian conservative value voters. In fact, I would say most Trump supporters are not Christian conservative value voters, because that group only makes up maybe 10% of the population, maybe 25% of the population, depending on which polls you look at. Christian value voters alone would not put anyone into the White House. And this line of people waiting to get into the rally was certainly not a Sunday school picnic. There were plenty of cigarettes and beer. There were more bikers than bankers, even though there were some bankers there too. I even talked with two gay men who refused to be interviewed for my YouTube channel because they both worked in New York City. And if it got out that they supported Donald Trump, they would be ostracized and fired. Because they have to follow the narrative that if you're a homosexual, you have to be against the Republicans, you have to be against lower taxes, and you have to be for open borders. The makeup of many of these Trump supporters is summed up by a t-shirt that was being sold. It was a caricature of Donald Trump holding up his two middle fingers saying, "Impeach this." These Trump supporters were simply blue-collar, hardworking Americans. One statistic said 25% in attendance were Democrats. These are just middle-class Americans who were sick and tired of supporting freeloaders and entitlement programs. They were sick and tired of being called racist by the left, being told that they're bad people because they have all of this white privilege, being told that America is a lousy, racist place, being told that we need to open our borders and become citizens of the world. Here are some quick takes.
He's keeping his promises, keeping his word. I want Trump for life. Listen, I'm a Vietnam veteran, 25th Infantry. I fought for Coach Chi, and I wouldn't go back to any other president but this president.
So it's all good.
He can do no wrong.
It's all good. All right, appreciate that. Wrong. Thank you very much.
He's honest, and he's doing great things for the country.
Is there one thing that if you said, oh, if he could change this, or one thing you don't like about him that you could suggest? It's all good?
Everything about him.
All right, thank you very much.
Two things that I'll tell you. When he came down the escalator in 2015, I started looking for a reason not to vote for him. And I never found it. But what I realized kind of in retrospect closer to the election was that he's not letting anybody else define it.
Get your hand, guys.
And I like the fact that I think America was a broken business, and he's a businessman, and he's fixing it.
Oh, there's the one main thing you like about him.
Economy?
What do you like about him?
He's a businessman, mainly.
You like the economic policies?
Yes.
The number one reason people gave me for their support of Donald Trump was his economic policy. They just want the government to leave them alone, for the government to stop taxing and regulating them to death. As James Carville said back in the 1990s, it's the economy, stupid. Donald Trump cut tax rates from 40% down to 20%. The government taking 40% of your income, whether that be personal or corporate, is a crime. And business is booming because Washington is letting the private sector keep the money it earns. And when Washington gets your money, it generally tends to waste it on useless endeavors. The private sector, when it keeps its money, requires real work and production. When ancient Israel split into northern and southern Israel back in 930 BC, it was over taxes. Rehoboam had just become king, and the 10 northern tribes came down to ask King Rehoboam about his tax policy. Would it be as oppressive as his father's, Solomon's? So Rehoboam consulted with his young friends, 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 9. So he said to them, "What counsel do you give that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us?' The young men who grew up with him spoke to him, saying, 'Thus you shall say to this people who spoke to you, saying, your father made our yoke heavy. Now you make it lighter for us. But you shall speak to them, my little finger is thicker than my father's loins. Whereas my father loaded you with heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions.'" So how do you think the people of northern Israel responded to that response? To more government control, to more taxes for Jerusalem, that Jerusalem needs your money because we know how to spend it better than you do. Well, 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 16, when all northern Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, "What portion do we have with David? We have no inheritance in the sons of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now look after your own house, David." So Israel departed to their tents, and the nation was split over high taxes. Now, the people in northern Israel, they weren't godly people. They weren't judging Rehoboam on the basis of his personal relationship with God or God's truth. They were only concerned with no taxation without representation, so to speak. And after the split, the people of northern Israel went after false religion. They were social liberals, but economically, they were conservatives. I mean, they understood that the institution of government is not called of God to take all of our money and redistribute it. They understood this, of course, out of just their own self-interest. The leftist immoral agenda in America that has latched on to the Democratic Party just so happens to include high taxes and a big brother government control agenda, which in the providence of God is actually good for the Christian community. Because if the leftist immoral agenda also included small government, economic freedom, there would be no stopping them. But fortunately, the foundational ideology of the devil's lie also includes communism, bondage, and slavery. Freedom politically and religiously is only found in the Christian worldview. It's only the Christian worldview that gives individual rights over the state. Galatians 5:1, it was for freedom that Christ set us free, therefore keep standing firm and do not be subject again to the yoke of slavery. And that freedom draws many unsaved over to the side of Christian governance. Because even though they don't know God, they have common sense to realize that the devil's political secularism is bondage. If it weren't for our small government economic freedom conservatism, as taught in the Bible, Christian conservatives would never win a single election. So thank God that the left is also the communist anti-freedom crowd. And the reality is that most of the Israelites on Mount Carmel in 800 BC didn't care whether Baal was God or whether Jehovah was God. They just wanted the person or the God who sends the rain. They just wanted the higher GDP and the higher stock market. And most of the Israelites who followed David, King David, wasn't because he was a man after God's own heart. And it wasn't because he was the sweet psalmist of Israel. They followed him because Saul had slain his thousands of Philistines and David his 10,000s, 1 Samuel 18. They were just interested in national security. So Christians need to realize that because true Christians have always been the tiniest minority, down through history, God has used the worldly desires of the unsaved to raise up protectors for God's people. Stopgap measures against a full-fledged satanic political agenda. And this is what it looks like we have in President Trump, a roadblock for the left. So rather than being fault finders, rather than being elitist, realize that God uses imperfect people, even the unsaved, to accomplish his purposes, to protect his people. And it's not wrong to appreciate the Cyruses and the Nebuchadnezzars and the Dariuses and the Artaxerxes of the world that God raises up. God even used a messed up guy like Samson to take down the Philistines. And God used the wild man Jehu to eradicate Baal worship from northern Israel. The eradication was not done by Elijah. It wasn't really done by the 7,000 true followers of Jehovah who had not bowed the knee to Baal. God used Jehu to shed the blood of the Baal worshipers. And not only does God raise up unlikely judges to judge the wicked, God undermines the plotting of the wicked by giving them foolish leaders. Isaiah chapter 3, verse 4, I will make mere lads their princes, and capricious children will rule over them. Rather than being politically savvy, the left is sabotaging their own party. Nancy Pelosi, ripping up Trump's speech on national television after Trump's State of the Union address, was a windfall for the Republican Party. It was a godsend. And the Democrats refusing to stand up and applaud for America's success is going to come back to bite them. One pundit said the Republicans got about 20 new commercials out of the Democrats' response to the State of the Union address. Last week, Judge Deneen Pirro said, I want to take this opportunity to thank our friends, specifically Democrats Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff, and Jerry Nadler, and the whole unhinged lot of them for guaranteeing the re-election of President Donald J. Trump in 2020. Their nonstop hate, hypocrisy, and hysteria has so exhausted us that we honestly can't wait to re-elect him again. Their political stunts have been a colossal waste of time, and they've sealed his re-election. So here's a question. 2 years ago, when the Republicans lost the House of Representatives and Nancy Pelosi became the Speaker of the House, did you think it would be a bad thing for Nancy Pelosi to take charge? Did you pray that somehow God would stop her? Well, in a sense, I did. But if we did, we were wrong, because God's good plan was for her to be there. How do we know that? Because she's there. God didn't stop her. The very fact that she is an authority means she was put there by God, and that's the whole point of Romans chapter 13. Those who are there are established by God. We often think the best plan of God is for him to remove all evil immediately, but actually God has a better plan. He sometimes allows evil to flourish to show the world the foolishness and the consequences of evil. There always needs to be bad examples. In fact, it would be a terrible thing if every elected official was a saint, because we would soon forget the nature of evil. We would soon forget to appreciate and to fight for the good. So while we're in this fallen world, God parades evil before us, which facilitates our turning to him, and it facilitates our redemption. So stop thinking that some politicians are in office by mistake, that God really doesn't want them there, but he leaves it up to us to remove them. No, every government official is put there by God to test, to discipline, to educate his people. Yes, we're to vote for good candidates, we're to support good candidates, but if the opposition wins, it's not a mistake on God's part. He wants them there to serve as bad examples. The Democratic debate in New Hampshire was one of those God-sent bad examples, exposing evil, providing a marvelous contrast between two worldviews. I mean, Warren Sanders, Biden, Buttigieg, Yang, Klobuchar, they all needed to be there. They represented the secular socialist state. And for the record, people needed to hear their ideology. And really, it's amazing in the province of God that the news media is hosting so many more debates than they used to have in the past. It used to be maybe three or four, maybe even six. But now there are going to be 12 Democratic primary debates before the election. And unbeknownst to them, they are being used by God to expose evil. And what did we see in this last debate? There was a vast contrast between Trump's State of the Union address, where he spoke all about new jobs and work for the American people. But in the Democratic debate, it was all about how the government needs to raise taxes to provide for you everything you need. Free childcare, free healthcare, free college, government jobs. But of course, none of that's free. The socialists want the government just to have the power and control over the lives of people. And again, what I saw at the Trump rally is people just want the government to stay out of their lives. They don't want government largesse. They don't want government control. They don't want cradle-to-grave government. And for now, God is using people's love for freedom, this desire to be free from the collectivism of Babel, to protect his people from the tyranny of the ungodly, which will someday come. Someday it will be said to these power-hungry people, this day and the power of darkness is yours. But for now, God is putting a roadblock before them, hindering their agenda by raising up opponents like Donald Trump, by giving them foolish counselors and spokespersons like Nancy Pelosi and the gang. Let's be thankful. There is a finger in the dike holding back the floodgate of ungodliness that will soon come. And that's the finger of God. So let's be busy. Let's do the work of evangelism and discipleship. Let's make hay while the sun shines. John chapter 9, verse 4, we must work the works of him who sent me as long as it's day. The night is coming when no one can work. Thank you for including God and country as part of your discipleship in the Word. Don't forget to subscribe, like, leave a comment below or a question, correspond by email. May Jesus Christ reign.